Oh, yeah, for now, there's
I liked your question about music.
Oh, yeah. Well, I liked your question about language. I got another one.
My mom just started.
I mean, it seems to me that a lot of this is...
Wait, what question about language?
Well, she asked, what was there?
Oh, yeah.
Language. Yeah. And I was thinking, yeah, how does it fit in? Because language can only exist in time.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking right now, what I'm saying tonight, is that this all didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of an introspection into books' existence, in a sense. And there's a couple of fundamental facts where, I mean, last week I was thinking about the fact that we're always aware that we're thinking. I know you're thinking because you show all the signs of being alive and conscious. So I assume that you're thinking. And I want to see where I'm going to do that. But I'm also aware that I'm conscious. And I think from what he was saying tonight, that there's the Atman, in a sense, the consciousness, which notice we can't talk about. It is consciousness, it's white consciousness, but that's especially right. We talk about consciousness, we really talk about something that stands outside of time. In a sense, you could also say, though, it may be hard to dismiss it from space, because we think of consciousness as... I mean, I think you can see it as something that has no order.
There's water.
And it's fundamentally distinct from thinking, which is
action.
And I think we can
look at the
difference between thinking and consciousness if we look inwards and try to listen to what's...
I'll bring another.
Is 9:10 work? There's no time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what
ladies and gentlemen,
they started from that point and then articulated.
Let me continue with dull things and return to the day before yesterday.
Now, look.
The idea of one emergence of thought that is together with its concomitants. I'm sure, remember that the objects of thought, that is the first group of concomitants in the separate emergence of thought, were divided into the six, shall we say, subclasses. That is, according to respective organs of senses. That is, you know, of course, you have six organs of senses, not five. It is five plus manas, plus mind. Yes. Now, for instance, let us take the object, one of the objects concomitant with the emergence of citta, emergence, momentary emergence of thought, but eyesight, yes? Eyesight. But eyesight, this one object includes in itself, it itself forms a very complex configuration. So, let us start from the bottom. So, from the bottom, that is, together with thought, C1 emerges among its objects. The object or an object of eyesight. Let us start with object of thought as object of eyesight. Yes, I will underline it. That is object itself. Object itself. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as itself, for instance, this hand of mine, this, I forgot the name of this strange green thing, pen, yes, let us call it pen, for convenience sake. Well, now, so it is an object of this pen. But in the Abhidharma, as such, this object of eyesight does not exist. It exists only at the moment when it is, I'm simplifying everything, I'm terribly sorry, when it is seen, it is being seen, only at this moment. That is when the eyesight, the organ of sight has already begun to work. Please try to follow me. So, before that start, there is no object of eyesight. Before the beginning of the work of the organ of sight. Yes, okay, but again, but the organ, the working organ of sight cannot start working without an special kind of consciousness or thinking. Not thinking in general, nor thinking in the sense of emergence of thought, but an special thinking, which, let us call it, for simplicity's sake, visual thinking or visual consciousness. Visual consciousness informs the organ of eyesight, informs it and gives it, in fact, gives it information of that which it is seeing. In other words, to make it shorter, the object of sense, yes, this pen, we can speak about an object of sense only when the organ of sense is working, but we speak of the working of the organ of eyesight only at the moment when its specific thinking or consciousness, Chakshu Dhatu or Chakshu Vijnana, starts working. The whole spatio-temporal complex is, as it were, activated by the organ of sense, and the organ of sense is activated by specific visual thinking. So, visual thinking informs the organ of eyesight, and only when it is informed, again, when in terms of kshanavada, in terms of momentariness, because as I told you the day before yesterday, all processes that take place within that group of concomitant of an emergence of thought are momentary and synchronous. When I say when, I'm repeating now Buddha Ghosha's commentary on the text, when means at this very moment. Not moment before, not moment after, but at this very moment. So, here, speaking of this triple work, object informed by the organs of sense informed by the specific thinking or consciousness corresponding to this organ. But it is not the end here, because that specific visual consciousness itself is activated and informed by mind, that is, by thinking in general, which is there, which is working simultaneously with the appearing of the object and with the organ of senses and with a visual thinking or consciousness. So we have here how many instances working simultaneously, that object, that organ of sense, that visual consciousness, and finally that mind whose work coincides with the emergence of Siwan, of that thought. Yes, please.
It's about the word and the concept informs you're using. Because my question was that when we use that word normally, informing, we do think of outside objects as pre-existing, right? There's an outside object pre-existing, and then the mind works on it and extracts some
information.
Now, I was wondering whether you use it in a way that, and I will not say West, but that medieval Christian theology is using it when they talk about the theology. It precisely means that the mind brings the other being this way around.
In a way, yes. In a way, something like that. By the way, the same example was cited by one of the first European investigators of Abhidharma, unfortunately already late, Rune Johansson from Göteborg. You know, so here, of course, we have a very strange hierarchy and very strange direction of time. Because, strictly speaking, time here, yes, is directed to zero. Of course, is directed to zero, that is to the time of the emergence of the first thought. Then, the question was asked, not by me, but by the first commentators of the Dhamma Sanghani, the first book of the Abhidhamma Pitaka, where this was described. Well, sir, must we imagine that a case, samaya, as I told you in Sanskrit, of complexity as, shall we say, obligatory, that it must be always there, and that is wherever we have an object of sense, be it music, speaking of the sense of shabda, on the sense of hearing, whether it will be music, whether it will be pen, an elephant, or we are coming to the object of the sixth sense, an idea. That's it, an idea. And an idea can be thought by mind, manas, mana in Pali, manas in Sanskrit, so only when that thought had already formed the idea of the idea. In other words, it is amazingly interesting that they managed to work out in the Dhamma Sanghani the first, I mean, historically attested formulation of reflection, of secondary reflection. And in fact, they even worked out their definition of reflection. I'm terribly sorry, in this case I would prefer, as a kind of an formal mark, to put in, instead of CT in reflection, to put X. Well, I know it is a kind of unpardonable philosophical license, but what can I do? I want to, because it is not what we call reflection. Yes. So, reflection was defined by them as the case, now Please try to follow me. I know. It is difficult. Reflection is the case that is samaya again. When? The case when thinking thinks of itself as thinking, but only as thinking and apart from all its objects of thinking. In other words, if I think of my glasses in my right hand and my right hand that's holding glasses, reflection according to the Abhidharma will be my thinking of thinking that thinks about glasses, but not as thinking about glasses. You understand that? It is not thinking with English, unfortunately. Yes, yes.
It implies very interesting thing. When you do not perceive something, it doesn't exist. When you do not perceive something, when you don't sense something, it does not exist.
But you know, it is not exactly so. Because the term to exist, body, in Pali, the term, in fact, we do not have existence here. And that is why I insisted that we deal with emergence, not with existence. Absolutely. The fact of which was considered momentary. So, and in the commentary, they very simply said, how can anything momentary exist? No, it emerges, and the object simply is that which not exists. The object of an organ of sense is that which appears at the moments of being informed by the organ of sense, which in its turn appears only at the moment when it is informed by the visual consciousness, which itself emerges at the moment of emergence of that very action of mind or that very thought.
But still, the leaf has to finish.
There is a problem here, which is...
Not one, a lot of problems, yes.
If I do not, if my mind don't think about thinking...
Yes.
How can I perceive something?
How can I think about thinking? About thinking, independent from my thinking about my thinking. My thinking at that very moment rid of any of its objects. I'm not seeking for excuses, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that still it was a 5th or 4th century BC. Yes. And when they were struggling with their own language to express it, that is, strictly speaking, with the first language of the Abhidhamma, the Pali language. When it was much later rewritten after the end of the oral tradition, when it was rewritten in Sanskrit and more than that rendered into Chinese and Tibetan, of course, it became much easier. Let me pass to the next very interesting moment. So, forget about what I said now for the time being. Now, I have already said, can we regard that configuration, not that process, but that configuration of micro events of one act of thinking, of one emergence, as it were, established. And the answer is quite definitely not. What I describe now is not a universal law, or even a universal rule. Why? Because all this depends on that which I called mental factors, concomitants called mental factors. And mental factors were divided by the Abhidharmist masters of old into two big categories. Remember mental factors? Yes, from the before yesterday, yes. Spontaneous mental factors and artificial mental factors. Very small general Buddhist digression. Ladies and gentlemen, mind that in the Buddhist, particularly Pali parlance, the word bad was practically natural or spontaneous. It is very important. So all that is bad is naturally, spontaneously arisen. All that is good is artificially worked out. That is, mind can be imagined and was described in the Abhidharmist texts in a twofold way. The first way, spontaneous, it comes to my mind that, yes, and artificial, that is, I made that appear in my mind. Or in other words, what was called yoga, that is, artificial cultivation of thinking. Yoga has no other meaning. I implored you last time to forget everything which is said about yoga in California, in Greenwich Village, in Greenwich, in London, or in any other idiotic places. So, yoga has only one meaning. Yoga means highly purposeful and highly artificial transformation of the natural work of mind. No other meaning it has. By the way, returning to that most famous, world famous text about which everybody knows and which practically nobody understands, the first line of the yoga. Of the first sutta by Patanjali, Tata, yoga citta vritti nirodha. Now, what is yoga? Yoga is stopping of natural fluctuations of mind. All other definitions of yoga are invented ad hoc in San Diego or San Francisco or any other. Yes, non-yogic place. So we may say that speaking of that work, starting with object and ending up with mind and thought, can be looked at that configuration from the point of view of normal thinking, that is spontaneous thinking, natural thinking, and transformational thinking or yogic thinking. But one very important reservation. A normally working mind cannot understand the yogic mind. The yogic mind starts with transformation of the normal mind and its understanding. More than that, all classifications in ancient Indian texts of the of the mental processes, normal mental processes, of course, were created by those who were on the level of the mind already transformed. And that is why we have the first in the history of humankind, the first towards our scientific psychology. There were three great yogic achievements of ancient India, you know. It is the positional calculus, mathematics, invented Shunya, zero, yes. The second, the first psychological theories in Jainism and Buddhism, and the third, you know, their own system of descriptive linguistics in the Panini grammar. Purely descriptive linguistics. And it was possible only because of establishing of that non-spontaneous level of thinking. Because again, it's very interesting, you know, in one of the Panini commentaries on Panini, we read today, anticipating not only Ferdinand de Saussure and André Martinet and Parti Jacobson, but quite a few other modern linguists. Each and every language can be discussed from two totally different languages, as we speak it, as we read it, and language as it is in our system. In fact, the first maps of language, the first descriptive text, they describe the text with the language as it has to be, as it must be. That is the idea of ideal language with all its elements placed in terms of spatial configuration. Now, what is particularly interesting now? So, if looked from the level of already transformed thinking and consciousness, that situation can be considered as a normal situation with sensual perception as it is, and as a situation which is going to be yogically, in Buddhist terminology, it was not yogic, but jhana and samadhi and bhavana. That is, as an object of yogic transformation, that configuration can be seen in its reduction, in its reduction. That is, when thinking reaches a certain level of of yogic transformation, the level of samadhi. Now, look. The first thing which is ousted from this configuration is what? Object. It is the object of seeing, then the organ of seeing, of eyesight, is excluded. And eye consciousness or eye thinking is excluded. That is, at the moment of visual meditation, yes, the third level of samadhi, at that moment, yogi does not see neither an object, pen, nor the organ of sense, nor even that consciousness, Chakshurdhatu, which informs the organ of sense about what it is going to see. That is, what we see is a yogic reduction of the whole process to the bottom, yes? Up, finally, what is left? It is mind, that thinks of that which may emerge as thought, having visual object as one of its objects. And of course, in during that process of transformation, a lot of other objects of a given thought are dismissed. And first of all, the subject of thought at which thinks, that is, think. So, a trained yogi, whatever he meditates on or contemplates, the only thing he meditates on is that primary emergent thought. All other of its concomitants are absent. More than that, when we pass to the third level of samadhi, which is called concentration of thinking on the pure space, occurs there. Well, thought, at that time, has already dismissed all other thoughts or ideas as its actual formation.
Okay. Then can I ask
you? Yes, please.
Why is it inconvenient?
All questions are convenient, not all answers are. But
and with your permission, because it's approaching to the end, I also can kind of get my thoughts around the object emerges simultaneously with the activity of the visual mind. That implied that the moment that this thought vanishes, the object vanishes too.
Absolutely.
I want it because there's such a beautiful nightmare that one could imagine. It's a kind of King Midas-like nightmare. Well, imagine that all the objects that came into being because your consciousness works would continue to exist after the thought moves on, right? Can you imagine? So all of a sudden we would have a huge space problem. This is like the computers. This building has, the attic of this building is full with old computers, which for legal reasons we cannot neither sell nor give away nor destroy,
yes,
because there is environmental hazard. So you imagine this, I mean, nobody uses those computers anymore, those computers don't
that
think
in
anymore.
In fact, they are situated in the absolute past.
Well, if there's an absolute
yeah,
past, but
yeah,
in your theory or
yeah,
in the philosophy
no,
of Virgil, right, there is no absolute past.
Non-Buddhistic absolute past.
Yeah. But as you don't dispose of an absolute past, then the Abhidharma.
Well, they, of course.
They do.
They had already done it long before they started describing the human psyche and mind. Oh, again, no. Purely Buddhistically speaking, to dispose of them would be absolutely superfluous, because they had already disposed of themselves together with the disposition of the absolute past.
I mean, this is the question where I was going. Could one then say, as this is implying what you said about temporality, that the emergence and the vanishing of objects is simultaneous? Because it can, according to what you said before the cigarette break, it cannot be a sequence. It cannot be first it emerges, then it vanishes. So it has to vanish while it emerges.
Except it depends on your definition of a similar cause. For instance, the Vaibhashika school of Buddhism, they insisted that though one kshana, 1/64 billionth fraction of a second, is very short, still it is the duration. Where we can talk about a synchronicity or diachronicity, but in the classical Abhidharma, it was perfecting. We are again in the domain of absolute. Again, not absolute. There is no time. And again, it's very interesting because in the commentaries, they felt themselves uneasy about read. Let us, for convenience sake, consider it as absolutely sinless, because even there is a time, it is so small that nothing. Now, how much time do we have?
It's winding down.
We just started.
Well, I mean, one possibility would be, I would say for emergence, like something, it might be that due, to use your language, to my ideologies were repressed.
I will be satisfied with 5 minutes, but I have already warned you that I hate time, you know. Yes, I hate time, but anyway. In Sanskrit, I'm akalavajan, yes. Yes, but the thing is, what is extreme, that process of reduction of the elements, of the most of the elements in the configuration accompanying emergence of self, a reduction is not purposeful and consciously directed. Reduction accomplished is a natural natural cases. When that reduction, that is, shall we say, impoverishing, catastrophically impoverishing, the objects disappear, the organ subsides, disappear, the science, organs of science consciousness disappear, and that takes place in this special states or mental states, which usually to make it let us make it short. So they are called intermediate states in Sanskrit, antaravara, and literally antara, intermediate, between states, intermediate states. When that disappears, it takes place spontaneously and in a natural way. Instead of, say, 17 factors, we see in a moment 5 factors instead of 5, 2. Instead of, shall we say, 6 organs of senses, 1 is left, then no organs of sense, then only mind, without any sensual data appropriating mechanisms remains, etc., etc. The state is very interesting. Let me enumerate them, because probably they give you some. First of all, they thought that the very state of birth, of one's birth, is, according to one group of texts, according to another group of texts, of one's conception, it would be said, a very strong reduction of all mental modalities in the process of the second state. It is a state of dream. In the state of dream, that is one of the mental states enumerated in the Dhamma, we have also spontaneous reduction. I'm not going to touch upon all those antaravaras or intermediate states, but well. Such a drastic reduction of the elements accompanying the emergence of thought was observed in by the Buddhist masters of Abhidharma in the state of orgasm. So it is forced, yes. Yes, then goes the state of the highest concentration. Of the top yogic state, and finally that phenomenon of reduction takes place. Death in the Abhidharma is of one thought, which is called Bhavanga Chitta, or of one moment of consciousness, while all accompanying concomitants like objects of mental factors, mental states, etc., are absent. And only that thought, that which is called Bhavanga Chitta, that practically is the last thought. thought of this being, which is in its, shall we say, elementariness, in its elementality, is practically equal to the first thought of, after the moment of conception. Birth here, in this respect, in the respect of emergence of thought, is equal to death. Is defined as the maximum or limit of redemption, of this spontaneous redemption, of this explication early Abhidharmist texts.
I went to Saturday, that's why I came almost late. I had crisis and enthusiasm. So you're being concerned, you're being taken by something. That this philosophy you're talking about is your love, and that therefore you caress it in the most irresponsible way. By the way, those who are not convinced of Buddhist philosophy, you will all have learned tonight, which I think is very, very important, that responsibility destroys love. I would also want to thank you, I also wanted to thank you for having given us a new meaning or new pragmatics of words like for heaven's sake. We'll never hear for heaven's sake the same way. We also will not hear the words with your permission the same way. Because when I hear with your permission, I hear it in the voice of a colleague of mine in comparative literature who will remain unnamed. And that colleague articulates with your permission in a very soft way, but you have this. With your permission? But it is like
more than order. Yes.
That we have learned, and I also feel that I associate now something different, less Anglo-American than before, with the phrase "ladies and gentlemen." This is also taken. Well, I think we all, from the bottom of our hearts, if hearts exist, maybe it is.
And if they have bottoms,
but they have to have bottoms because space is so important. From the bottoms of our heart, we wanted to thank you also. I mean, I'm saying this because you see that we can maybe have a full performance one day. We already tried that close to the Russian border in March, Sasha, Professor Piatigorsky. And for heaven's sake, where are my photos? My photos are this. we'll have dinner at Palermo, that's on university, close to Port. Stanford possibilities of inviting people for dinner are slightly more limited than on Monday, but not completely limited. I mean, it circulated through photos, now they have disappeared. Spanish.
There were metal objects.
They need to emerge. I concentrate on them. Or maybe they came back and I didn't know. Or somebody put them back.